What Does It Matter podcast, a non-topical solution for your topical problems. Movies, pop culture, music, foul language, you got it. WDIMpodcast.blogspot.com. Also follow us on Twitter at WDIMpodcast. The fun never ends, and it's something real.
He's dead, all right.
No kidding.
He's so cold.
Is the pizza?
Oh.
Well, life goes on after all, and eating makes me feel best. When I feel bad, and boy, do I feel bad. Oh, I feel better already. Really, I do.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I'm your host, Jason Bishop, and with me today, as always, is Sam Stepanenko.
Hello, hello. Are you ready to be massacred?
And back in the house, and so appropriately for Women in Horror Month, yes. Trish Coughlin.
Yes, yes. I was busy, you know, looking at a bunch of massacres, and it was fun. Having slumber parties, getting prepped, really.
Right. Well, I'm glad you made it.
Yes.
In more ways than one. And we've been leading you on here for a couple of weeks saying, yes, February is going to be Women in Horror Month. And now it is finally here. It is the 10th anniversary of Women in Horror. Mm-hmm. And Women in Horror also not just celebrates the women that make us scream and hide under the covers, but it's also an annual blood drive, and it's the 10th anniversary of that, so we hope you enjoy this episode and all the other Women in Horror specials coming to the other podcasts on All the Horror, hashtag All the Horror, or follow at All the Horror 18 on Twitter to figure out all the shows that are getting involved. But make sure at some point this month you go to your local Canadian Red Cross or American Red Cross and donate some blood. Yep. It could save a life.
Yep, blood, it's in you to give.
Yes.
We've heard that before somewhere, haven't we?
True.
I have no idea.
And as we've seen with horror movies, there's a ton in you. So, I mean, you can spare some.
Yeah, that's right.
And at least it's voluntary.
It
yes,
is.
Yes.
Because it's not so voluntary in this one.
No. No, no, no.
No, there's actually a lot of blood. Not a lot of gore, but a lot of blood in this movie.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it was done fairly cheaply, but
and it was 1982.
It is. Mm-hmm. This is, we're going to be talking about The Slumber Party Massacre. It was written by Rita Mae Brown, who's an active feminist and mm-hmm. was trying to write a parody of the slasher films at the time, and directed by writer-director Amy Holden Jones, and she's very active in film even today. She's written stuff like Made to Order, Mystic Pizza, The Relic, Ooh. The Getaway, a bazillion Beethoven movies.
She's created a couple TV series.
Yeah, she's created a couple TV series. It doesn't look like they've gotten past one or two seasons, but I've always liked her. I think she's... Yeah. We'll be hearing more now that she's show running other stuff now.
Yeah. Nice.
I think it's just a matter of time before something takes off. And really, the launching stuff now, especially if it's network, is mm-hmm. probably not going to take off now. You kind of got to look at other platforms because it's so hard to grab that audience now on network.
And it really is. And there's so many choices out there now.
Especially if it doesn't Absolutely. Have capes.
Yeah, true. And it's one or two seasons. Sometimes you can get a really good series out of that. Like it'll mm-hmm. be one of those ones where those little gems people missed. And then they'll want. But yeah, it's hard. Being a successful TV show is like very, very hard.
Yeah. I mean, I've watched spectacular shows that only ever had one season.
Mm-hmm. Blood Drive.
Yep. Blood Drive is definitely one
How
of them.
How appropriate.
Yes.
See, we just bring it up again.
it comes together.
It never goes away.
It never will. Sorry, it just won't.
Someday, maybe, just our influence will be like, you know, Blood Drive, we should bring that back.
I don't think they've stopped shopping it around. You know, hopefully they'll come up with another Grindhouse idea. It doesn't even have to be the same cast, except for one person.
Yeah. Ooh, but it could be like an American Horror Story sort of anthology thing where he's just in all the series as a different character.
I would love, well, he could even be the same character, just don't explain it.
Yeah.
True. And either or, it would work. It would be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, they kind of explain how you could do it in the series.
Yeah, except they destroyed all those cloning vats.
They could work a way around that.
I suppose. Yeah. What are we talking about?
Yes. If you guys don't know
by now, oh my God, we've talked about Blood Drive on this show so often that just go Google it. I'm not going to explain our ranting. It is beyond me at this point. If we haven't ingrained in it to you to go find this series and buy the box set, then I don't know.
We can't help you.
We can't help you.
We cannot help you.
But what we can help you with today is The Slumber Party Massacre from 1982. And like I said, written and directed by Amy Holden. This movie, it's about 77 minutes, so it's not a lot of time suck for you. It is a quick movie. It is rated 5.7 out of 10 on IMDb, and Rotten Tomatoes was less forgiving at 36% critic score and a 45% audience score.
Which is still pretty respectable for an 80s horror movie, to be honest.
Yeah,
80s low-budget horror movie. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you know what? This was the story behind how this even got made is kind of interesting. I mean, the budget on this is super small. It's like $250,000, and then it box officed about $3.6 million. Yeah. So,
explaining why
we got two more. And they still kind of use the Slumber Party Massacre. There was one not that long ago, I think, called the Cheerleader Massacre or something like that. That's kind of a spin-off of this one. I don't know if it's officially so, but they're certainly, through the poster of that movie, it certainly looks like it takes everything from Slumber Party Massacre.
Certainly, and there was one called Sorority Babe Slumber Party Massacre.
Yeah.
With some of this cast in it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Man, when I was going through this cast, and I'm like, wow, there's not much to tell here, but it could be great fodder for some cheesy stuff. Because the ones that had other film roles, like, there was just kind of similar stuff to this. But yeah, this movie stars Michelle Michaels as Trish.
Mm-hmm. I'm a bit of a coward in this movie at certain points.
But you're the lead.
I am.
The second lead is Robin Stile as Valerie, Sam's wife.
Val.
Trish and Val.
The other hero.
This might be familiar to our audience a little bit. There's some weird synchronicity going on here today.
It's very strange.
And if you hear some like wind in the background, it's a very blustery day here in Calgary. So,
And it was briefly blizzardy.
Yeah, briefly blizzardy, which was kind of fun to watch. So, yeah, that's what that is. But it'll just add to the eeriness of the episode, right?
Ooh.
That was the wind. Michael Villela was the killer, Russ Thorne, who was actually in a fairly prominent film called Wild Orchid.
And he was actually, even though he didn't get very much dialogue, he was really actually interesting when he did speak.
Yeah. He wasn't interesting any other time his face was on screen. I'm like, wow, you just... Did they give you a lot of coke?
You sort of got nothing from him. But I mean, I thought that was supposed to be sort of the point. It was just so mindless and just crazy that...
But when he did get dialogue, he was actually really creepy.
Yeah. I'll run some in the after credits thing. I'll run some of that. How about that? Deborah DeLisle, she was Kim. Andre Honor, she was Jackie. Gina Sminka Hunter was Diane, and believe it or not, she's been in, we've talked about her in an episode before. Sam's been doing his homework lately.
Didn't do it on this one, though.
God, you knew Trish was coming back, and you could just sit back.
Oh, I did some other homework. I'm guessing you're going to get to the big one that I did some homework on at some point.
possibly, because this is the only one that relates back to an episode that I found. But
is it the coach?
No, it was this. This is Diane, the one that was sneaking in the boyfriend in the in the garage. She was in Sword and the Sorcerer, which is episode 41.
Oh,
was she?
What was she
I looked
in
through
that?
Her credits. I didn't see it.
It was. She was in there. Probably just like a background player. I didn't actually write down what character she was. I certainly didn't remember it, and I doubt we ever brought her name up.
Well, no. And the thing is, she looked familiar. I'm like, I was going, what have I seen her in? What have I seen her in? What have I seen her in? And I made a point of going to her IMDb, but I didn't catch that. My bad.
Maybe that might be it, because if she was a background player, then it probably wasn't high up on her.
That's true for most of these people, honestly. Jennifer Myers was Courtney. Joseph Allen Johnson was Neil. David Milburn was Jeff. Jim Boyce was John Miner. And you've seen him in Ed Wood.
Yes.
Which was probably the most prominent thing I could think of him in. Pamela Roylance was Coach Jana. She's been in some stuff. She was in Her, which was an Oscar-nominated film, and The Social Network, also an Oscar-nominated film. And Brink Stevens, who's never been in Oscar-nominated anything, but
she's been in 192 movies.
Yeah.
Insane amount of movies. And my buddy Rich would be very upset if I didn't say she was in Savage Streets, because that's his favorite movie.
Of course.
Shout out to Rich. And she plays Linda in this, and Rig Kennedy was... I'd have to say it because it was hilarious. David Content.
Yeah. What was that last name? I've never heard
it. I don't know. And I actually liked the character John Miner as well, because everybody, every time he shows up, they go, John Miner. Yeah. They have to say his full name every time. It's hilarious. I'm like, wow, your girlfriend's really formal with you.
You could see in the movie where they kept some of the stuff from the original sort of parody script, right? Like that, everybody calls him by his full name, John Miner. There's a few other moments, like the scene with the refrigerator. That had to be in the original script.
It works.
It's fucking funny.
Yeah, and I wish there were more of that in there.
Yes.
Because they are trying to make it more of a typical slasher movie. I know Rita Mae Brown, that was her intention for the original script, which was, I think, picked up by Roger Corman. And director-writer Amy Holden Jones... She wanted to do, this was like her first directing gig, and she needed to prove something. She just blindly picks a script off of Corman's shelf. At the time, it had a different name. I think it was Don't Look something. I don't know.
If it's Don't Look Now, probably had to change it, because that's a much more famous.
Yeah, it was something similar to that, but it wasn't that. Yeah, so she picked the script. She grabbed some people to film about 10 minutes over the course of a weekend and bring it back. She got a few meetings, and they're like, hey, okay, we like what you saw. Let's make this movie. And then she got really drunk because she was supposed to be editing a small little movie called E.T. for Spielberg. So she got really drunk and decided to be a director.
Oh, no.
Because... it's the only way you turn down a good script like that. But, you know, she'd been doing a lot of editing at that point, and she wanted to make a jump, and you got to start somewhere.
Yeah. Sometimes you just have to make that sacrifice. It's a hard call. Because, I mean, you never, like, if you're doing editing all the time, you never know when that next one's going to be huge, right?
Yeah.
You're not sure.
Yeah. And, I mean, I don't know if she hasn't done a lot of directing. As far as I could tell on IMDb, there was only four that I actually saw. Lots of writing.
Yeah.
Lots of writing.
So maybe that just was a place where she had to figure out her career path and whether that was something she wanted. I don't, you know, seems like a bug that she's, like an itch she scratches once in a while, but isn't the driving force in her career.
Yeah, and you can tell that she was an inexperienced director when you watch this movie. Mm-hmm. She does some really interesting stuff.
Yeah.
But there's also some really sloppy stuff.
Yeah, and given her writing skills, it's too bad she didn't get a chance to make another pass at this script.
Yes.
To make it a little more
coherent,
passable, and just give the character some dimension, any dimension, really.
It's a lot of it, all the characters are pretty flat.
Yeah.
I mean, Val's the only one who gets any kind of development, and that's just, she's the new girl.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's about as far as it goes.
And she's also just sort of very much an outsider kind of at that point, and that's...
Who happens to live across the street from Trish.
Next door.
Next door.
Next door? No, she's across the street.
Isn't she? I thought she was next door. Next door, and then she is down the hill.
Oh, next door
is David Content.
Yeah. Yeah. Before we forget, I wanted to mention this in case we all forget. This franchise, Summer Party Massacre 1, 2, and 3, is the only franchise where all the movies are directed by women.
Nice.
That's cool. Yeah. I didn't have a chance to look in that.
Yeah. So, it's unique in that as well.
Yeah. Now, I could see certain complaints. I've actually seen some horror documentaries where this movie comes up. And, I mean, this movie, much like slasher movies, is sexual in nature. Mm-hmm. In fact, metaphorically as well. There was an interview in one of the documentaries I saw where the director's basically says, well, what's wrong with women being sexual?
It's true.
They specifically focus on that at one point there where the younger mm-hmm. sister is looking for the Playgirl magazine.
Yeah.
And then later on, there's a point where they're talking about the magazine as well. I think that that's part of what makes this movie feminist is an acknowledgement of female sexuality.
Yeah. Well,
and the curiosity.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
When I was looking at Courtney, I'm like, yeah, of course, if I knew a Playgirl was around when I was her age, I would be looking for it.
Yeah, she was at that kind of rebellious teen stage where she's still, her character was weird. I didn't know how to take it because she looked older than they think she was playing.
Yes.
Yes.
And
they all did.
They all did. But that's typical in film. But
especially with that much nudity.
Yeah. And I think the script would have been fine even without that nudity. It was just something exploitive of the time, right?
Well, that was sort of some of it. I think the only reason is anybody ever said anything is because sometimes when you're looking in the nudity, like I know there's one where they're in the shower and like it's just basically a pan up and a pan down. And I'm like, this feels like a note from a studio where you're like, we need to have these shots in to make this movie.
It was pandering.
It does a little bit, but it's interesting because most of the nudity, as much as there is in a non-sexual way.
Mm.
That's what makes it gratuitous, though.
Yeah,
it's
it is gratuitous.
But the shower one, like when they're changing, I get that. I'm down with that.
Oh, I mean, she's definitely pandering to an audience.
But the panning up and down in the shower, it's not the fact that it's like non-sexual because she's showering. The camera is the eye that makes it sexual.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. No,
it's
she knows who her audience is. This movie is called Slumber Party Massacre. It's got a bunch of pretty girls. She knows this is going to be watched by a bunch of teen men.
And honestly, I thought I was going into a strange area. Well, not a strange area, but like an interesting area with like Trish and Val. Because I mean, like there's this look that they're sharing like in the shower. And I'm like going, maybe there is something between them. Like there's this sort of sexual tension they have that they don't know.
I was hoping it would go there.
That's what I was hoping, because I mean, like how it would be confusing. I don't know. Like you'd be like, I feel something, but I don't know what it is. Like, I mean, at that age, there's a lot of stuff happening. Like your hormones are going like bonkers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then for her, because she was kind of, I don't want to say obsessed, but she was very interested in Val. And she didn't, and it didn't really take that very far.
Well, there's no real story yet. Like here's this new girl who moved in across the street. She's new to the school. Trish is trying to be friendly and invite her to the party while her parents are away. The slumber party, although their parents are very aware that the slumber party's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this weird scene at the beginning where she's packing up all of her toys. Like today was the day she decided to be an adult.
Yeah.
Like, and then put them in the trash. I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. What about eBay?
I wrote that down.
It's the 80s,
I'm like,
no eBay.
I never put my stuff like that in the trash. I stored it away because there were several options that I had in my head. I'm like, okay, maybe I get older. I give them as gifts to younger children.
Yeah.
Or don't throw them out.
No, or pass them to.
Or donate them. You don't do that.
Your hopefully new friend, Val, across the street has a younger sister.
Yeah.
Like, there's people you can give that stuff to.
It was there for one purpose and one purpose only, to set up the bit with the doll.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was, yeah. There was a doll that got used later for a bit of scare tactic. And even then, I couldn't quite make out what the hell happened with the doll. It was just kind of sticking in the window.
Yeah, I couldn't get it.
Tell exactly what was happening with that.
Yeah.
Why is that creepy?
I don't know.
Yeah, it was one of those things that didn't
there was
make
no
sense.
Payoff.
It didn't really fit into the context of the movie in any way.
No.
It was just a payoff from an
Well, it was supposed to be a scare gag that didn't really work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But taking stuff out of your, just deciding that day is the day, no.
today I'm an adult because my friends are coming over and I don't need them to make fun of me.
And you know, that's what I thought was kind of happening. Yeah.
Stuff them under the bed.
Yeah.
Well, if you put them in the closet, that's what you do. Anything you're ashamed of.
Or in the basement.
Yeah. You don't throw them out. You put them somewhere else.
You can tell there's some regret in tossing some of that. But there's always that, as you're growing up and letting go of your childish things, that it's sometimes hard to let go of. But even then, she was still at that age. You're like, just stuff it in the closet for now.
Well, remember in the part of the movie where Courtney's looking for the Playgirl, she goes into Val's room. What does Val have on her bed? Two Raggedy Ann dolls and a bunch of other stuffed animals.
One of them was Annabelle.
Yes. But she had dolls and she had stuffed animals in her room that she didn't get rid of.
Which is stuff that you'd still have at that age.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, even it's at 17, 18, you're not entirely ready to give up childish things.
Yeah. Right? And if you've had them your whole life, you're like, what does one do with these? You don't throw them away. You just can't. They're too much a part of your childhood.
Mm. I still have my childhood teddy bear.
Oh, me too. I have my Raggedy Ann.
Don't. I kind of wish I did, but I have all my Transformers. Now that's just an investment.
Yeah. Nice. Well, see, but that's part of it, too. Like, boys would have those things. Like, there's a couple things I miss from my childhood that I'm like, I wish I still had that thing.
Yeah. No, there's definitely stuff from my childhood, too, that I wish I had that thing. But, you know, that's hindsight and all that.
Yep.
Yeah, but a number of them passed on. I did exactly what I said. I gave them to, like, people who had children.
Mm-hmm. But I think we've kind of hit on something where essentially every character in this movie needs to be developed because they're just people with names and sometimes you don't even learn those.
Yeah.
Well, before we start, I'm like, who is the blonde one?
Oh,
she didn't seem different.
I kept wondering what the name of the black girl was and I just decided it was Jackie because it was the only one I didn't attach a name to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it wasn't until I was like doing my research for casting and I was going through the original IMDb cast. I'm like, okay, I look at the photos. I'm like, okay, I know who that is now.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to.
Yeah.
So there wasn't a lot. There was no character development.
None at all.
I wonder if there was more. Like another pass of the script would have maybe given more development. It would have just been.
Well, I mean, it's not like there wasn't room to do so because, like I said, it's not even short. 90 minutes. Like, yeah. It's 77 minutes. So you could spend some time with these, setting up these characters a little bit. I mean, the only setup with the killer is like, yep, the psycho guy has escaped jail. And
it's
on the prowl.
It's the newspaper article and the radio.
Yeah.
It just pops up. I think they do it three times
in
the film.
And they
don't
explain much except for the fact that he's escaped and give you his name.
Yeah, that's about it.
And the fact that he had killed five people.
Yeah, the newspaper had the killed five people. That's the only reason I knew about the plot.
Yeah.
The movie's kind of very Halloween-like. I'm going to run the trailer here. I'll let you guys decide if it is very Halloween-like like I think it is. But we'll come back and we'll talk some more about this and then we'll roll into some of our thoughts about how to remake this.
The basketball team is planning a party. A slumber party to bare their souls.
Hello? I think your tits are getting bigger.
Mine?
All the girls are coming. Except Mary. And Linda. And they won't be missed. The party begins at 8 o'clock. It's a slumber party for old time's sake.
Love it too. Do you think I'm getting better?
But be on the lookout for an uninvited guest.
Please.
When the pizza arrives, things really start jumping. Some people may have to leave early. But others will hang around. And hang around.
Here, Courtney, you're underage. Negative. Let's go.
You're not going to eat the dead guy's pizza.
I feel better already. Really, I do.
But for those who stay, there'll be plenty of surprises. And non-stop action. For sure, no one's getting any sleep the night of the Slumber Party Massacre. Close your eyes for a second and sleep forever.
All right, that was trailer for Slumber Party Massacre 1982. Mm-hmm. I love those ones where they just like lots of narration and it's silly.
Yes.
Yes. You don't really need to watch the movie. The short is the trailer.
Yep. Oh, yeah. I was like running the trailer, and sometimes I think I should just leave the mics on while the trailer's going because, like, oh, look, boobs. More boobs. Like, all the nudity's in the trailer.
So we're talking those special 80s boobs with the tan lines right around them.
Yeah. You yeah. said, I'm like, I used to wear those clothes.
Oh, yeah. Like, the little kind of, when she wakes up in the morning, that first scene, I'm like going, oh, the little baby doll thing. Like, but I gave that thing up well before 18.
Did you have the orange shorts?
We had blue shorts with yellow stripes along the side. That was our gym kit. In stable.
Yeah, I just didn't understand why she was wearing her gym wear all the way through the movie.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I think that was supposed to be her sleep outfit, but it felt like she just hadn't changed after her track and field.
Yeah. Well, this was Courtney. Yeah. Courtney, who was wearing that.
But
yeah.
You can have, you and would all have the other shorts.
Girls were the basketball team.
Yeah. You would have your other shorts that you'd have at home. Like, I could have a pair of red shorts and a t-shirt. I love the 3/4 length shirts that were like the baseball shirts. Yeah. That was definitely something I slept in.
Courtney was an up and coming jock chick.
Yeah, she
is. You know, her big sister was on the basketball team. Maybe she's got some hero worship going on there.
Yeah.
I think so.
Oh, that basketball scene was so painful.
Yeah. Some of the girls knew what dribbling was. Some of the girls, I'm sure, didn't know what a basketball was. It was like, I mean, I don't think. I know you have to cast for something, and I know you're casting for looks, but honestly, there had to be some attractive women who knew how to play basketball.
Or at least could fake it well enough to look at least semi-realistic.
Yes. Yeah.
Or just, you know, have some games before you shoot it.
Yeah.
Like, get in there. If you're the gym teacher, you suck. You have failed as a teacher.
Well, I mean, the gym teacher is it a completely extraneous character anyhow? She serves no discernible purpose except for that to show up and die.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Right.
But I'd say that about most of them.
That is most of the characters, which is pretty tropey slasher flick stuff anyhow.
I mean, Jesus, some of them don't even get introduced until they show up to the party.
Right.
Like, sure, there was in the shower scene, maybe.
Yeah, they were all there's the clueless scene where they're all walking together out of the school. Which is the only time you see Brink Stevens.
Well, she's doing repairs on the phone line. She's, even though she seems the age, same age as everybody else in that movie. Yeah.
It seems like she's slightly older. Like, I'd say, like, maybe she's 21. She went to do her apprenticeship. She would be about the right age.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, no, that wasn't Brink Stevens.
Yeah, Linda was Brink Stevens.
Yeah, but the Linda wasn't the telephone person. Linda is the one who says, I don't think I can make it. My parents are really on me.
Oh, yes.
About my grades. That was Brink Stevens.
I thought
the telephone repair lady didn't get a name.
She's telephone repair lady, but I mean,
Brink Stevens. I went down the IMDb rabbit hole.
I guess the trailer made me confused because they say Linda when show her.
Yeah, that's
so.
Yeah, but Linda's in the movie for literally one scene. And that's the scene where they're walking out of the...
What a waste of Brink Stevens.
Right?
Yes, but this is only her second or third role. And if you look at her IMDb, I'm going to keep going back to that. But like her first 10 movies, she's like uncredited.
Oh, I don't think she ever turned down a role.
No, which is smart especially if you want to be one of the original screen queens. Really, with 192 movies, I mean, I think she's outpaced Leanna Quigley.
Ooh,
who is probably one of the most famous.
Oh, when I think of like screen queens from that era, those are the two that first come to mind.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. For sure. She was just kind of starting out. This is like only her second or third role.
Yeah.
And her first one with dialogue, which is the one line, the throwaway line there.
Right.
Yeah. But a telephone lady, and then it sort of just happens, and he just wanders around just in places.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Her sole purpose was, one, to be the first kill, and two, to get him his chosen
weapon.
Van.
Penis substitute.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because telephone repair people have giant fucking drills.
They do to drill through foundations and through walls. That's what that's what that drill is for, is to drill.
Yeah, that looked like a concrete drill.
Yeah, it was. There's no question, right? But that would be for drilling through a foundation if you're putting a new line in, kind of thing.
Right.
Right? So that you can go through like a foot and a half deep foundation.
So at least there's some accuracy there.
Okay.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. Fair.
Yeah, but no, it is doing a tool it by you yourself? Would, you would maybe not in that particular truck, mind you.
yeah.
But yeah, you would see that in a telephone truck or a cable truck. Potentially.
Right. That was the other thing that sort of bothered me is that truck was largely empty except for that one implement.
Yeah, you'd expect to see a lot more tools and equipment.
More
in there.
Wire, more tools, just some set deck. Yes. That's what I need.
Yeah. But they had a budget of $250,000. They probably could barely afford the van.
But in this instance, when we're making it for ourselves, we're doing more set
deck.
We're
going to stock up that damn van.
And the actual scene where she dies, maybe let's dress that up a little bit. Have her fight back a little bit more. Maybe put some wires in there. I don't know. Do something with it.
Yes. Yeah. Well, all of the death scenes we could have a lot more fun with.
Absolutely.
Well, I want to turn this back into a comedy.
Yeah.
For me, I want more of that Cabin in the Woods, Whedon-esque kind of Drew Goddard type of... Yeah. Character development.
Yeah.
So you really enjoy the characters on screen when nothing's really happening as far as the kills and stuff goes. Mm. So you're still enjoying the diatribe between the characters.
Well, and there's parts of it I thought that was happening. Like when the two perverts show up, that really slows down a lot of the pacing.
Yeah.
There was a moment where they're all kind of sitting around just reading their horoscopes, like having a slumber party. The actual slumber party portion of this movie is almost nothing. I need more of that. I think I would like to see that.
Well,
and then you can develop those characters.
Yeah, the two boys, like, it's almost like the girls expected them to show up. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not boyfriends. They're there to just cause a little terror and frighten them. It's a very childish thing to do, really.
Yeah.
It's one of those 80s tropes, the whole Peeping Tom thing, where it's like guys go to sorority houses and slumber parties to peek in the windows and hopefully see some boob.
Yeah. Right?
And they do. And that's probably the only time in the movie where the nudity fed the story at all.
Yeah. I love where they say, well, like, what if we get caught? We'll run. We both failed gym 3 times. Yeah. So I'm like, okay, I'm keeping that because that is all the character development I have to grab onto.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have to keep it in there because it's important.
Because at the end, they're supposed to go running for help and they fail gym. The girls are on the basketball team. They're the athletes. Yeah. What the fuck?
Well, and that feeds back to the whole original concept of it being a movie about strong women.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
But the message gets so mixed.
Yes.
Right? Because you have these really great moments where these characters are strong women and they are the protagonists of these films. But then they weaken them later at other points.
Like Diana, at the point where John Minor scares her and she throws him on the ground and then she has such an unceremonious death. That pissed me off. I was like, why? She had capability. Give her a fight scene of some kind. Like,
yeah, and we will.
Yes.
and that's what really bugs me about it. Like, these are supposed to be stronger, kind of the jock women, the more popular women in the school, but I feel like they're more take charge type of people. I mean, you do need some to die. Mm-hmm. And it seems like they happen so quick. Like, it's more out of stealth. Open a door. He does a slash with the drill bit. Mm-hmm. And somebody gets gutted. Or the poor pizza boy.
Yes.
Oh,
but we have to keep the pizza boy.
We do.
We really have to keep the pizza boy.
Because you have to keep the part with the pizza. Out,
and the pizza scene is the best scene.
I looked at that.
You know,
like,
it is, because that's what I opened the opening clip was.
Yeah.
Because it is fantastic. Well, life goes on.
Yeah, and that's, again, where you see the parody coming out of the original script.
Yeah.
Right? Is obviously Amy Jones went, I love this scene, I can't take it out.
Yeah.
Like the refrigerator scene. And
the
scene with the skill saw.
Yes. Yes.
Because you saw that coming. It was so funny, though.
That reminded me of one of my 31 Days of Horror thing where the guy's like, grabbing the weapon, and then he's like, oh shit, I can only go so far.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed that bit.
That almost needed a pratfall. Yeah.
I think I've seen that parodied before in something else, not just the third way. It's been done a few times, I think, after this one, because it is a good bit.
It is a good bit.
Yeah, especially as the audience can see it coming. And you're just waiting for the moment, right? And she gets so far before it comes to
a big extension cord.
It is a big extension cord, which I also liked because it wasn't like you were going, okay, maybe she's going to make it. They actually give you that.
It's actually good that the plug came out of the wall rather than the pratfall, because that could have ended badly.
Yeah.
Ooh,
yeah. Yeah. But I like the fact that they give you that. She actually did a good job of giving you the sense that she might actually make it, because she makes it so far.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then, boonk. and her reaction, it was like I'm so dumb, I should have known better,
right? Yeah, well, and then she lands on the guy too. She's like, I'm so dumb, I should have known better. And they're like, oh gross, I'm on the dead guy.
Yeah,
there's so much to be done there. It's so fun.
Yeah
it, there's got to be more comedy in here.
Wait, and Linda was the one in the school that got trapped in the school at the beginning.
That her?
The one that gets, it's,
yes.
Yeah, she's the one that gets, I there was a scene in there I really liked, because I'm like, oh my god, she's almost smart. You know, she's hiding in the closet. She's been injured already. Yeah. She's been badly hurt, and she's bleeding pretty badly. But she's hiding in the closet, and she's trying to sop up the blood from going underneath the door. Unsuccessfully, but I'm like, it was just a nice little thing. Like, okay, she's still got a presence of mind. And I'm like, oh, got to keep that, because I so liked that.
Yeah, and it goes back to that whole mishmash, the confusing messages, is you have this woman who's in peril but is still thinking of ways that she can try and save herself.
Yeah. Right?
And those are the great moments in this film, are these moments where these girls are inevitably going to die, but they're fighting back in whatever way they can, which would be in this case, sort of,
you're just trying to outwit him,
to make sure that he doesn't discover her, right? Which is sometimes all you can do. I mean, it's typically unsuccessful in slasher films, but...
Yeah, or this one kind of starts out as a slasher film. Like, I'd like to see it morphed into a women in revenge film.
Well, what I'd like to do
It kind of does at the end, just not very well.
Yeah. Well, I like the idea of kind of these women coming together. Like, when all three of them are going at him to take him down, that's something I'd like to keep. But when we're talking about, like, a parody and have more of the humor of it, I kind of want this guy to... It's like these women are fighting back, but the tiniest mistake, and he fucking just lucks out. He doesn't kill them because he's the more about. He's just lucky. Mm-hmm. And that would be a great parody where this is the killer is just simply fucking lucky.
Yeah, because I think once they become aware of him in the house, like, that's home turf at that point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there is, okay, well, he's not going away. We got to lure him into traps, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Stuffed animals can come back in this point, too. Like some of the childish stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you could have a fun bit with that drill and a stuffed animal, right? I mean,
They do make such a point of making that drill the manhood, right?
Yeah.
And when they cut off the drill bit with the machete, it's like chopping off his manhood. So, like, well, I mean, the metaphor is there. Why don't we just do it?
Yeah. Well, I love the part, too, where she's smart enough at that point when he's a little distracted. Okay, taking off the hand. You don't have a hand. Good luck with that, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The end of the movie is actually probably one of the stronger parts, because it kind of brings everything together. But there's something I have to mention about Trish. Is she, all the way through the movie, she always seems kind of mad. There's very few moments there where she's not.
Like, that is so unlike Trish.
You know, we should keep that in the film. Let's make it accurate.
Because
I was mad when she hits him with the bat. I'm like, damn it, Trish, you keep hitting until he doesn't get up.
Yes. And me too. I was actually thinking the exact same thing.
If there's not mush on the floor, you haven't hit him enough.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, exactly.
He's just going to get up.
Yeah, especially considering it's a slasher flick.
Yeah.
And the other bit is, like, why would you not keep hitting him? He's got a drill. He's killed your friends. Like, are you sad to try and kill somebody you tried to kill?
When she knocks him out, he's only out for, like, 5-10 seconds.
Yeah, he's not out for long.
No.
Like, one of them doesn't make it to the door.
Yeah.
Well, and it's the same when he gets hit with the rubber fire poker.
Oh, I know, right?
That was, when we talk about some of the bad stuff that Amy Jones did, that was some of the bad stuff. I mean, that poker was so clearly rubber when it was hitting him.
I was expecting a sort of, what I could like to do with the coach is that she's got like some fencing knowledge. There's a fencing coach, and that would have been interesting to do.
That would have been really interesting. I like that. Let's keep that.
Right? Sure.
And instead of basketball, they're fencing.
Well, we could just see him do a couple of different
sports. Yeah,
like, I mean, well, in high school, you're always rotating sports. Yeah.
Well, and they even talk about that in the movie.
Yeah.
They're switching over to baseball.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you could have...
Because we had archery and We had archery and lacrosse and basketball and baseball.
But fencing would be a lot easier to fake than basketball.
Yes.
Well, if they're fencing, then it looks like these women got some self-defense skills.
Again, which feeds into the tension that we want to build, right? Is if they're already at least somewhat trained in self-defense of some sort.
Right? Exactly. And like I say, it's supposed to be an accident. They just make one small error and this guy just lucks into a kill. Because then it's funny.
Yes.
So let's go into these girls one by one and try to decipher what we think we know about them based on what little they give us. And let's try to expand their characters a little
bit. Please.
Let's do that.
Absolutely.
Because I think those will be fun because there's so little to grasp onto. So it's all those little bits in the movie. I'm like, okay,
there's
those
nuggets.
Are the things we got to pull those nuggets from. Pulling the nuggets. I'll let that sit there.
Okay, that stays in the film. That guy just keeps pulling his nuggets.
Okay, the top bill was Trish.
Mm-hmm.
And we know she's a popular girl in school. Yeah. Her parents have gone away. She's embarrassed by her childhood.
Yes, she wants to be a grown up.
What else do we got in there? And she's kind because she wants to bring this new person into her party.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, there's that argument in the gym lockers, and Valerie overhears from over the other side and wasn't going to say
Diane, because Diane's a bitch.
Yeah. She also allows, she kind of allows her friends to walk over her a little bit, which isn't right.
And I think, and I agree with Trish on the fact that I think that she's confused about her sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I would really like to play up on that.
Okay.
Right? Because she's at that age where it's like, who am I? Mm-hmm. Right?
And you know how you talk about these boys? They aren't boyfriends, but she's always surrounded by boys. But there's not really any boys that she's seeing.
That's right.
And I think that might be good to play with. Yeah.
And I think when you're talking, if you want to keep the intent of the original film, which is sort of these strong female characters, I think that having a character who is confused about their sexuality is not going to do any harm.
No. Mm-hmm.
I think it'll strengthen that character a lot, actually, if she's acknowledging her attraction to another character and unsure how to act on it.
Okay. Yeah.
And, you know, when we're talking about the theme of the drill as, like, the manhood, this really also feeds in the fact that, like, she's not interested in that drill.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. And the metaphor goes further.
It does go further. Yeah. And you get some chance.
And horror should be that way.
With some really great dialogue at the end there, too.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I can hear it in my head.
Yes, exactly. Right? And I'm hoping that our audience can, too.
You want this to happen. You want this in you. And she's like, no, I don't. It's not my jam.
Exactly.
It's fine.
Yeah. And I mean, you don't and the thing is, you don't even need necessarily have Valerie be gay either. Valerie is just the object of desire.
The metaphor of not just the drill, but innocence and blood is that first sexual experience.
Somewhat.
Yeah.
I don't
There's
know if
not
that's
too much blood.
No.
But basically, the first time you have your period, that's the horror show.
Well, that's Carrie.
But yeah, as a girl, that was terrifying, more terrifying than anything else.
Right.
But Courtney too, what we could play up too is like her sexuality is kind of funny. Like she knows she likes boys, but like to have those little misdirects where she's playing dead and playing jokes on her sister, that still stays. Sorry.
Yes.
I was just thinking of that. But having the object of desire be someone who may not unrequited love also. That's high school. That's all of high school.
Yeah. I mean, I think these are great character developments for her. There's a lot just kind of subtly sitting there that can be expanded upon. Okay, let's move on to Valerie, the neighbor, and the next big protagonist here. The one that's invited to the party but doesn't want to go because her friends are bitches.
Yeah.
Well, her one friend. There's only one friend who says who's a real bitch.
Yeah.
Right? And I definitely want to play that character up.
Well, I want to see, like, there's a competition between who actually leads this group of girls.
There's a dominance.
Yeah.
Is it Trish or Diane?
Yeah. And I think that would be something fun to play on and some of that cattiness. I mean, that might make her kind of a more of a typical bitch type character, but we can give a few more layers. That's one more than she already has.
Right.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, because really her only layer is that she's a character and a bit of a slut.
Well,
not a slut, because she only sleeps with one guy.
Yeah.
So I
wouldn't say that. But actually, she's willing to blow off her friends to go sleep with the football.
You say that, but because there's a great bit there that I want to keep where she's talking on the phone and they're listening in, and she says, "Do you think I'm getting better at it?"
Yes.
That has to stay.
The blowjob conversation.
Yes, I think that has to stay, because that's something that I assume happens, is am I getting better at doing these things that I'm doing?
Yeah. Well, it'd be, I mean,
it seems natural.
In a lot of ways, there is some coming of age stuff happening.
Yeah, there's a lot of coming of age stuff here, and that's...
Yeah, I mean, all of this is very new. You're like, yeah, I mean, nobody comes out the gate knowing what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And some never learn.
Exactly. And then there's some, like Trish, who barely have no desire to learn.
Yes.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
But I would kind of like Diane to be like, I would like to add it sort of a thing going like, are you ever going to return the favor?
I would absolutely add that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's something that sounds like she would say,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. But what's funny, though, is there was a little bit of a moment where she wants to go, but she's like, I'm going to talk to them first. Because the other thing is like, she wants to leave and she is going to leave, but she does ask the other group.
There's like, a level of respect.
Yeah, I can't ditch my girls.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, again, it seems very genuine. Like, there's all these bits in this movie that feel so genuine that were obviously really well written.
Looked better on paper than on screen.
Exactly.
Yeah. Could add more.
Yeah. Okay, so Valerie, new girl. I mean, the innocent character.
Yeah. I think their parents are sort of absent, or their parents are divorced and the one parent is absent, which is, it's just her and her sister.
It really does. I mean, why is her folks gone too? Everybody's parents seem to be gone.
I think she's more of a surrogate parent to her sister. I think that's part of the reason is she's taken on this parental responsibility.
Because, you know, yeah, they probably have one parent and who's always working or always away.
Yeah, they just a throwaway line saying mom's at work, she'll be home after her midnight shift or whatever.
Right? Yeah.
Right. And she
and
also,
we can even have, like, the girls gossiping about, like, Valerie's parents had a divorce and that's why she's in.
Yeah, they can really
town.
Amp up that scene where Diane's being a bitch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where she's like, well, yeah, she's only got one parent and she's just a nurse or... Right.
Yeah, which would have long shifts. And
And overnight shifts. And
overnight
kind of
shifts,
that. So just, and that fills in that hole right there.
Yeah.
Right. They know just enough about her to be catty about her without really knowing what she's like.
Yeah, and it sets up why her parents aren't, or her mom isn't there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there's also the other throwaway line is like, I wish they got divorced before you were born.
Yes. Yes. And it's because they do kind of set it up there. So you can really play that up and set it up a little bit better. I think that there needs to be more interaction between Trish and Val before that scene, though.
Yeah.
I think it should be right away in the opening before they go to school.
I was just thinking the same thing. They live across the street from each other.
Exactly.
Trish sees Val out there because she's
dumping her toys in the garbage.
Well, we'll fix that somehow.
Hey, but, can I have that stuffy for my sister?
Yeah.
Or she's like, I have one of those. Yeah. And that, you know what you could have, was like, I have one of those.
And then it makes her change her mind and puts it back in the
she puts it in the garage.
The garage, yeah. And yeah, I like that.
We talk about the doll, like the Barbie. Have you ever been hit with a Barbie? Those things fucking hurt. I would keep something with that.
There's a lot of pointy bits.
Yes.
Well, they're hard plastic.
Yeah, like the bodies are really hard plastic.
You could hurt somebody with that.
Ooh, I like that, stabbing with a Barbie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
or somebody else gets stabbed with a Barbie.
Well, yeah, well,
the Barbie's sticking out of the pizza boy's eye.
Ooh.
That would make more. That would actually work really well. And you could work the Barbie still in. That's broken, right? It's missing an arm or the head's missing, and it just has. Well, you want the head because the head's kind of creepy, but there's something's missing from it. Is that's why she throws that one in the garbage, which still sets up that scene with the hand taking it out of the garbage and then it showing up later,
right?
Or alternatively, part of it is the knowledge that maybe he's in the garage because she put the Barbie in the garage. And then when they see the Barbie and the pizza boy, they're like, oh my God.
He's been in the house? Even better.
Yeah.
Even better.
Yes.
Okay.
We got this figured. We're doing so well.
We're doing good. Okay. I guess with the killer, I mean, typically you don't tell much about the killer.
I think you need a little bit of backstory on the original killings. I think that they need to be, to sort of clarify that they were all teenage girls or something along those lines.
His MO has to be established because it wasn't really.
No.
There was nothing except that he killed five people and he escaped.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. If we just establish a little bit more of that, I think that would be good. And honestly, I wouldn't show him so early. Just keep him in the shadows for as long as you can.
Mm-hmm.
I agree, because one thing that actually...
Or introduce more male characters. Mm-hmm. So there is a layer of doubt of, have we seen him yet?
Well, the next door neighbor, there's points where I'm like, I don't know what you want to do with him. Is he benevolent or pervy? I couldn't figure it out.
I think he's both.
Yeah.
Yeah, like he's friendly to the family, so the family trusts him to keep an eye on things if mm-hmm. there's any troubles, and he's the cool guy. It's like, well, hey, don't go too heavy on that weed there.
Maui wowie.
You know, he's
but
like,
he's also he's been in the house when nobody else is home.
Yeah, the cool guy in. Just walks in, so he's a bit of a perv. He's a bit sketchy, but he acts all nice when mm-hmm. people are around. So, but we could do a little bit more there where. You know, misdirect. We have some doubts on him, yeah. And there should be. I think that we should have doubts on at least most of the male characters, so maybe any of them could be, and maybe the killer was never here, and one of the killers is just taking advantage of the fact that this guy's on the loose. And
nice.
And we never see Russ.
Like a kind of a Scream level type of deal where it's misdirect.
Yeah, I see. I like the idea of
or
data content getting... I actually have an idea. So okay. We're going back to the doll.
Cool.
Okay. So he's the one who takes the Barbie.
Initially, I thought it was.
And, well, that's so. What I did too, right? Yeah. So he actually is the one who takes the Barbie. Okay. And he's the one who gets killed by the Barbie.
Ooh.
He shows up with the Barbie in his eye or better yet, stuffed down his throat with just a little head sticking out of his mouth.
Yes.
Do we have like a little scene from the backside? Like he's sitting in his chair. We can see the Barbie sitting on the table and a little bit of flap, 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 flap. Just make him extra pervy.
You know what? If we're going parody, that would work.
I mean, we don't see it.
Yeah.
But we know what he's doing.
Yeah.
The guy's jerking off to his neighbor's doll.
Who's your Ken?
Yeah, let's amp up his perviness.
Yes. Oh, that's awful.
Yeah. It's awful and it's wonderful. And you know what? You could even have him say in it.
Oh, you know what? But you know what you would need to do? Here's what I would prefer and demand if it's doing that. It's a naked Barbie, but he has drawn on the nipples and the bush just so that it looks like a proper female.
Okay.
I insist on that.
Okay. And there's a Sharpie sitting next to it.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm seeing that his end in my head with the Barbie head sticking out of his mouth, and I'm just like, I really like that visual.
It's good. I like it too.
I do too.
You've got it.
We're disgusting.
We really are. But that's the point of this. We're going parody, so we have to be a little bit pervy and disgusting.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, you had some thoughts about Kim before we started the show. She was the one with the longer, straighter hair that got stuffed in the fridge. And Sam had the thoughts.
Yes, about the Kim. Actress, actually. Because we're talking about the women in horror, and we're talking about Amy Jones and Rita and Brink Stevens as... Mm-hmm. Sort of continuing to work in the industry and Brink Stevens in particular in horror, but Deborah DeLeo or DeLisa, she's also still quite active in film, also mm-hmm. generally in horror. Mm-hmm. She's written, directed. She still acts, like she's still cool. active, more behind the scenes, but she still appears in movies and in smaller roles and stuff mm-hmm. like that. So this movie did start some careers, and a number of them stayed with the genre. If you want to just to sort of stay focused on that women in horror thing is this was not just a sort of the first franchise that sort of focused on female directors and writers and sort of empowering them to be creative in the genre, but it also started some careers in the genre.
Yeah. Now this character to me seemed a little more sporty, a little more spunky. She was, I don't know. Like, I think if we have like a group leader with them, that conflict between Trish and Diane, this is the one that I see as more of the one they count on during the sports aspect. Like, she's the best among them as far as that goes.
I think so. And she's also, I see her being the one who sort of mediates when the conflict gets a little bit much. Mm-hmm. She's the one who kind of breaks it up, right?
Yeah.
She says something funny or she does something to break tension all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Right? Like, because she just seemed like that kind of character because she's always chipper and she's smiling. And mm-hmm. and she's also got the dirtiest mind, but she also seems really innocent,
mm-hmm.
right? Because there's that scene where they're talking about what's in your mouth and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah. It's not what's part of your mouth. It's not the size of it. It's what's in it that counts.
Yes. Right? And I thought that was really funny. Mm-hmm. I mean, but she's always the one that sort of is kind of the joker of the group as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, and she's the one, she brings the beer, she brings the pot. She's like, yeah,
we're she's ready the fun, to have fun one.
She's the fun one, yeah.
Yeah, she's the one who sort of gets everybody.
And I think that's the character that will have the most fun dialogue.
Oh, yeah.
I think.
Yeah, and I would definitely, again, amp that up and give her some of the goofy lines and the fun.
Yeah, when we see her mediate more in the locker room and maybe even on the court, like, we just up those aspects of that character so we get a real idea of the type of person she really is.
Yeah, and I'd love to, the scene where Trish chases after Val, I'd love to see Kim go with her. Mm-hmm. And be the one who says, you know, don't take her too seriously. She just doesn't know you yet, right? She'll change her mind, right? She'll get to know you. Please come, right? But Val's like, no, I still have to stay home with my sister, right? Yeah. So she has another excuse not to come.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's like, mom's working late. I can't. I just can't.
Yeah. Right? And again, it sets that up.
Yeah.
Right, as to why those two are home alone.
Yeah. Now there's... Now there's poor Jackie here who gets so little to do and say, but she does get the best scene in the entire movie when she does get something to say, and that's when the pizza boy and they've been huddled in the corner with their knives. They're like, maybe we should cover them up.
Yeah.
And so they cover them up. That's the scene I played at the beginning, and she eats the pizza. So she's one of these like meh.
She's the practical one.
Yeah.
Right? She's the quiet. She sits back. She's the brainy one. Like, she's the one who just sort of sees the logic of situations and just rolls with things.
Yeah, I like the idea of just keeping her the most emotionless character, like the complete wrong reaction to the situation. Yeah.
Yes,
every time,
which would make it funny. It would give her own personality. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I also like you say, like, emotionless but smart. She's like sitting there going, "Well, honestly, if I were killing people, what I would do?"
Yeah, you could have. It sets up dialogue so well.
Yeah,
and it also sets up sort of some of the logical fighting back kind of stuff that we want to do, where they're setting booby traps, like all on the Nightmare on Elm Street kind of stuff, right?
Yeah,
where they're working on ways to defend themselves from this guy rather than just hiding in a room with a locked door.
Yeah.
Oh, and I love, like, part of it when one of the setups that Jackie had suggested and they did pays off, but it's after Jackie's dead.
You know what? We don't even kill Jackie. We think she's dead.
Oh.
Well, we do have that fake out with Jeff at one point where he's killed, where we think he's killed in the garage, and then he's the killer's off and kills Neil, goes back for Neil, and Jeff's kind of crawled off. So now we could replace that, because honestly, those characters are just there to scare the girls and give us a bit of a fake out. We could still have that, but we could maybe play up the fact that maybe these guys, they're perving on the girls, but there's a genuine interest in some of them.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like, maybe one of them is a boyfriend, and it's just like, okay, they're having a girls' night, let's mess with them a little bit. She'll forgive me.
Oh, you know, if you're going with one of them that's nerdy, I want one to be, like, just really interested in Jackie.
Yeah, Neil's definitely the nerdy one.
Yeah, but, like, Neil's, like, he's like, well, do you think Jackie will be there? Like, he's a little slightly obsessed because she's sort of his jam.
Yeah.
Okay, I dig that. And maybe Jeff is the boyfriend. I got the feeling in the movie, like, Jeff had interest in Trish, and it just wasn't reciprocated.
Which would play up on how we've developed the character a little bit, right?
Absolutely.
Right, and you could even have a really great piece of dialogue before they start, the killings already start, is where Trish fesses up and she says, you know, I don't think I'm into guys, right? I'm still figuring that all out, right? So
I don't want that to be nailed on the head so brutally.
We could have, like, we'd have the usual dialogue that we would have at slumber parties, which is like, okay, so who do you like at school? And that's something that really did carry on until I got 18.
Yeah, one of the slumber party games. Yeah, okay, that I can get behind.
Yeah.
And then Trish is like, there's nobody that really, you know, is what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Like, she's just very obtuse about it.
Yeah, I mean, I would think, I'm like, it's been a while since I've been 18, and I certainly was never an 18-year-old girl. I would think the slumber parties are a little wilder now, a little different.
It's a lot of it is talk. Mm-hmm. It's those conversations. People who have had sex, you are asking them questions. You want to know what's going on. You're very curious. You want to know who likes who or who might like you. That was also a very big question that was had all the time. Does anybody like me?
Yeah.
It's very terrifying to know that.
Actually, you know what? Sorry, going back to Trish's dialogue about, well, there's nobody I'm really like. She could say, there's somebody that I'm kind of interested in, but I don't think they feel the same way, so I'm just not going to say. I don't want them to know.
I like that.
Right. Okay.
Right, because it still leaves that ambiguity.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe just a wistful look across the street.
And then you could have Jeff kind of overhearing that part going, oh, I wonder if it's me.
Yep. And he's completely wrong.
I think that would play actually really well.
Yeah. Okay. I kind of dig that. Let's see. Who haven't we done a lot with yet? Courtney, the little sister.
I think that you're right. I think that Trish is right that she's kind of a jockey, plucky younger sister. They suggest that she's quite a bit younger.
I think there's hero worship's going on there. Yeah. I think she should be younger too. Or if she's not as young, then don't make her dialogue so bad that she feels like she's somewhat challenged.
Yes. Yeah. There's some stuff to fix with Courtney, but I like Courtney's strength because she at one point is briefly the hero of a scene where she trips Rich.
I think they are a little like, for me, I wanted to cast it where she was closer in age, but maybe like 3 or 4 years younger than her older sister. Yeah.
And that's the way I kind of cast it. I did cast so that she's visibly younger as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, you know, even as if she was like 15 or 16, she'd have her stuff a little more together than this one does.
Yes. Yeah. But I still want to keep those scenes where she's exploring her curiosities with stealing her sister's magazines. Yeah. And I like the fact that her sister has the magazines again, because it really points out the fact that women are sexual too.
Yes.
Yes. And that was something Amy Holden Jones is always sad about the film. Yeah. So, absolutely. And always defended about the film.
Yeah. Well, and we want to keep that.
Exactly. Yeah. Like with Diane and John Minor, when the whole thing with like, yeah, you know, when you're a teenager is like, okay, yeah, no, sex is on the table and I'm trying to figure this whole thing out. I'm going to go for it. I'm not going to not.
Yeah.
What I like with Courtney, what I want to keep is that scene where her and Val, like Val's got the magazine and she's flipping through and she's saying their profiles. I want to keep that because it's sort of Val's like, yeah, no, this is, she doesn't want Courtney to be embarrassed by her sexuality. Yeah.
Maybe she just, nowadays, if you modernize it, she's like unlocked her sister's iPad or something.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly, yeah. But
the same kind of thing, yeah.
Exactly. But it's not, they're not looking at hardcore stuff. They're looking at nude photos of men and kind of getting used to seeing male genitalia. And like the moot scene does, it sort of helps, Val's helping her sort of become comfortable with her own sexuality. And in the process, Val's becoming comfortable with her own as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This scene also establishes Val as an unattainable person for Trish because she's clearly interested in boys.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it sets up that conflict for Trish as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But at the end, oh my God, other thematically thing, your sexuality doesn't matter when you're fighting an evil killer. It doesn't matter at all.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, John Minor, football jock, obviously.
He needs no more. No. He does not need any more.
I love the fact that they just like say his full name every time. Yeah. It's just ridiculous and have him killed off.
But really, he's there as a slab of meat. Leave him as a slab of meat.
Yeah.
Okay.
I want him to be goofy. Like, I want to show a little hint of why Diane does like him in that he is kind of sweet to her a little bit.
Yeah, he's sweet to her and he's a little bit charming to her, but in the end, he is
a slab of meat.
Yeah, it's like, well, you know, who cares about your friends? You need to spend time with me. So he's a bit selfish.
Yes, right. Which he is is as well, but it's not as developed as maybe we should make it. Right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, we've talked a little bit more about the coach, where she's a little more capable and maybe she's teaching the fencing. And fairly, because she's the coach and a team leader, she's closer to the girls than maybe another teacher would be.
Yeah, and I mean, she's almost too close to her.
It is
a little close.
I would like to have her just a little bit older.
No, age-wise, I thought they were too close, and I definitely went older.
Yeah, and if somehow in my infinite wisdom, I forgot to cast almost all the adults.
See, and I thought she was gay too.
I thought so too, with her super. I was kind of expecting that kind of dynamic.
Oh, and I was upset when the super's like, I'm just putting in your peephole. All she did was drill the hole. She didn't put the peephole in.
Yes, she did. I was going to point that out too, is because all of a sudden it was just there.
Yes. No, show me somebody putting in a peephole. I'm kind of curious.
I thought that was great. Like the drill comes out. I was thinking, wait, he's already inside?
Yeah, and that was a great
good fake out.
Fake out.
Because we've established the drill a couple of times now. And yeah. Here it comes in right near her face.
Which would have been a great 3D scene, because that felt like a
3D. I thought so too. Yeah. The first thing I thought of, like, that would have been good in 3D.
Absolutely. Yeah.
There's no break, and all of a sudden the peephole's in.
Yeah.
It bugged me. It bugged me. Inexplicably bugged me more than it should have, but it did.
Yeah.
It's not inexplicable. It should bug you. It's very upsetting.
I think we can leave out the cable installer. It seems pointless. Mm-hmm. If you're going to have that first kill, just make it a bigger scene, the Linda scene. Mm-hmm. Just make it a little bit longer, a little more cat and mousey. And I think that works well.
She goes like into the van and then does something else. And then he's in, and then out of the van, like reaches for something and he's there. Like those mm-hmm. little fake outs.
Well, if we're getting rid of the phone repair, you can have a construction site at the school,
and there. He just takes it.
Yeah, there you go.
And they have one of those drills there.
Yeah,
they have shop at that school.
But they wouldn't have a drill like that in a shop.
No, I'd say there's some construction going on at the school.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or just near the street, and it saves on it, because honestly, the vehicle doesn't matter as much.
No.
I mean, as fun as it was seeing her get killed and nobody noticing.
Yes.
I felt like you could have had a little more character driven stuff there.
Well, I expected more. It's sort of like her kill was like bang on the back window down, bang on the back window down.
Yeah.
And like, that's not as exciting as it could be.
No.
Well, most of the kills aren't, to be honest, because of the limitations of their budget and special effects.
And location.
And location, yeah.
But they were smart to use a lot of the ones where they're just off screen.
Yeah.
Okay, I think we've run through the characters.
Yes.
And in doing so, we've got some great scene structure and character development as well. And that's what you really need to fill this movie out, because it is a typical slasher movie. There's usually not a lot of depth, but you want to make it fun, and so you are invested in those characters, and that's why. And I want to keep that kind of sense of humor in there, like which that made something like Cabin in the Woods so much fun to watch.
I need an explanation for all the shelves in the fridge. That's one other thing I want. Is they accidentally come across all the shelves in the fridge, because that's the only way to get her in there.
Yes. That's hilarious. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah. Why did they take out all the shelves?
They open a closet and it's like full of shelves and milk and apples and just like, whatever was in the fridge.
How high were these girls?
Yeah. Yes. They're like, No, we haven't touched the pot yet.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's totally.
Bag of pot. How did this happen?
What other drugs did you take?
Well, Valerie comes over and the door's open. Maybe that's one of the things she finds is like, what is all this?
Yeah.
Yes.
Wrong with these girls? I'm glad I didn't come.
It would add a lot of the humor to it. I have a vision for actually what could be a very funny scene. A very funny and then disturbing right after is you have the scene, because there's a scene where he's putting the bodies into the trunk.
Yes.
And he's having trouble fitting them in, which was kind of funny.
I thought that was funny. Yeah. And he's counting them like he's obsessive compulsive.
Yeah, and I love that.
Well, that's why I thought he had to get to 5. That's what I thought he was doing. It has to be 5.
Well, it was because he realized one was missing.
That's exactly. And you could still do that, and I think that would be funny. It could be Jackie instead of Neil or Jeff or whichever one was kind of crawling away. But I have this sort of vision in my head is that he's putting all the guys in the trunk because he doesn't really care about them. They were just in his way. Mm-hmm. And then all the girls, he's actually has in the garage. He's already starting to create a shrine of these girls that he's killed.
Yeah.
So you have sort of the funny, and then you do the counting bit.
Well, because he does says, you know, you're so pretty.
Yeah, it sets up that.
So why would he kill the boys if they're not?
And you could kind of establish this, like he's just sort of tossing them in, like he doesn't care about them. He's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then he puts, and it's just the guys. Yeah. And then you go to the scene where he's doing something with the girls, where he's sort of creating sort of a scene with the girls as a way of honoring them after he's killed them. Mm-hmm. Right. So it goes from kind of funny to
really
disturbing.
Dark.
Really dark. And I think that would be a really great juxtaposition.
Oh, and then it's all the crap in the garage that he's using to dress them up with. Like one of them was wearing her mom's wedding dress, another one
a
prom dress.
You could have fun stuff like that. And so it's disturbing and funny at the same time. But it also kind of sets up Russ's mental state before you get the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. I think that would give the character a little bit of development as well.
Yeah. And because it's a garage and you keep tools in there, if they're posed up on the walls, there's a corpse of Diane next to a hoe.
Oh, no, yes.
And
Well, and then what you have, like, you know what most shops have is, like, you put your tools on, like, these pegboards.
Yeah.
And the pegboards are the perfect way to pose somebody.
Yeah, exactly. So I was thinking to pose them, and we could have the tool that most represents the dead person.
Yeah. Oh, my God. What would you do with the funny one?
Hmm.
Oh, my God. There's a Billy Fish. You know the ones that do that? That's next to her. That's above. They're above each of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We can even say go on. Really
really subtle placement sort of as to their character. Oh. Yeah, and then with Jackie, you could have like a level or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, but Jackie's not really dead yet. Right? Mm-hmm. And maybe she never does die.
Yeah, you can have something that kind of almost predicts that she's going to get off and get a couple more shots in before she goes finally.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, you don't have to kill everybody.
You don't. No. She can have her in really bad shape. But
at the end, she's like crawling towards. Maybe she has one final thing to contribute to the final battle.
Well, I mean, even if she escapes, it could be as easy as just being a warning.
Yeah.
If she's in bad shape, she's not going to get too physical.
The Billy Bass. She triggers it.
Yeah. There we go. Yeah, she gets off the pegboard and it funny, triggers the Billy Bass.
Yeah.
He's coming.
I like it.
Yeah. No, there
it's
we go.
It's tragic, but funny, but real fucking dark.
Just like waving, setting off the motion detector on it.
Yeah, no, that works. Exactly. It gives her surviving some purpose. Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Ah. You know what? We could totally reinvigorate the market for those fish if we do this right.
You're right.
Oh, the marketing for that would be awesome.
Well, it's Billy Bass, so it's Slumber Party Bassacre.
Oh. We're so glad you're back.
Thank you.
Okay, hey, we got anything else to add here? Because I'm interested to hear some casting here.
Yeah.
And this one was a little bit tougher because, you know, we got to dig for age-appropriate people here.
Well, and
it's mainly diving into shows I don't watch. But
my cast is mostly people that I don't know well, or there are a couple of them I don't even know at all. But
yeah, there's some in mine.
Their look.
Yeah, there's some like that in mine, and others I do watch the shows, so...
Yeah. Yeah, and mine kind of crosses over that, and there's not very many names in my casting.
Yeah, now for me, it was like, okay, I wanted to make sure we had a diverse cast.
Me too.
I was think it was very important to keep having a female director, so I'm assuming everybody did that as well.
Yeah.
So, all right, well, let's contribute to our women in horror with our title character, Trish.
Yay! Okay, so I went a different way with this because it was like, you know, I just, like I say, I like the diversity, and I was like going, I want a Trish who I would like to look like, and because she's really the Trish I went for is Andrea Bang. She's in Kim's Convenience. She's the younger sister.
Oh, okay.
I just think she's just cute as hell, and I like the thought of like a diminutive heroine.
Mine was kind of in the smaller size as well, and she's a good lead, so but yeah, I kept her a little smaller as well.
And then
the unlikely hero, right?
Right. And that's sort of part of it, is that's we're also doing the trope of like how will women defend themselves? Well, that's the thing. Like, the unlikeliness is part of what the feminism is. Valerie, Carly Chaikin, she's on Mr. Robot. She plays Darlene.
Okay. Yes.
I think she's really cool. Okay. Diane Amandla Stenberg. I think I've got that written down right. She was Rue in The Hunger Games.
Okay.
Okay.
And she's sort of spunky, so I'm like, I just like that idea as well. Mm-hmm. I think she's sort of got that a handle on that. And then I had for Kim, Portia Doubleday, also for Mr. Robot.
Okay.
She might look a little older, but there. And then Jackie Alexa Vega.
Yeah, I was
from
like,
Spy Kids.
That's funny. I cast her sister.
Oh, that's awesome. Nice. I was trying to cast actors that were basically born in the 90s.
Yeah.
You know, in their early 20s or just barely 20.
She could play younger, I think, if you dress... Like, she's dressing older in the show, so I think if you dressed her younger, she could totally pass.
Sure.
For that. And then for Courtney, I had Maisie Williams, Game of Thrones.
Oh, okay.
And then
Arya Stark, the best character in the show.
Right? I'll take and your then word for so it. Like she would she is Courtney. She could totally do Courtney.
Yeah. Again, I'll take your word for it.
For
get off my back. I still haven't watched it.
Well, I'm waiting till the next season finishes and then I'm going to binge it all from like 7 on cuz I sort of stopped around
there. As am I, except I'm going to from episode 1 on. Episode 1 is the only one I've seen. Sorry.
That's all right.
Everybody at home just rolling their eyes.
You know, that's okay. Sometimes with the, you know,
they know why.
There's
a
lot of between seasons, you're on edge. So good on you. That's a smart way to do it.
And as my child Skylar says,
I would have been on
watching it at the end of at start of season 4. It just backfills everything that happens in seasons 1, 2, and 3. Anyhow.
I would have been on. Everybody knows I would have been on board from day one, but everybody kept spoiling it for me, so I just refused to watch it until I forgot what everybody told me.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. Sometimes the overhype I get a little bit.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
I won't do it.
Hype turns me off. Yeah.
Yeah. I've read the books.
I'm not joining the you cool kids. Yeah. I'm going
to
go find the thing that's even better that you're not watching.
Yes.
That's how ahead of the game I am.
Blood drive.
See how I worked that in there?
But we also want to be the things like I want to give an audience to things that probably aren't necessarily getting an audience. I probably should have.
Yeah, Game of Thrones didn't need me.
Right. There's other stuff that needs us.
That's right.
Exactly.
Okay. For the coach, I went with, as we were talking, the woman who played Kim in the original, I went with her. Was it Deborah DeLisa?
Yeah. There we go. Oh, I would go with that with the coach as well. That goes to our throwback to the originals.
True. And she's also very sporty. So it would be, that would be a great callback because she is the sporty one. We made her the sporty one.
I did cast a coach, but I'm down with that.
Yeah, I'm totally down with it since I didn't cast one. So
yeah.
And the killer, I went with John Ortiz, who was the bad guy in Fast 4.
Because
he looks a lot like the guy.
He kind of does, yeah.
And then my director is Catherine Bigelow, because I like watching her do action stuff.
Hmm. We might be talking about her later in the month.
Maybe. Just might be.
Maybe. I don't know.
So yeah, that's my casting.
That is awesome casting, as usual.
Thank you.
Is it my turn?
Yeah, okay.
My turn?
Yeah. For the second build person, Val, he's married to, that's the order we're going in.
Yeah, we're
going to
go in billing of the women.
There we go.
I don't have any connections here, so.
No, you don't.
Only through the people I know.
There we go.
Which is
you have to know a Jackie or a Kim.
I don't know any Jackies or Kims.
Oh.
At least not currently.
Not currently, oh,
okay. Yeah.
So I'll start with my Trish. I cast an actress named Madison Pettis. She's in a lot of TV stuff. She's mostly in a TV show called The Fosters, which is excellent.
Oh, yes.
Beautiful young woman. She's in her early 20s, but can play younger because in The Fosters, she plays a high school kid. So I thought she'd be a really good fit. And she's small, pretty, and multicultural. Gotta love the multicultural.
Mm-hmm.
For my Val, I cast Molly Quinn, who plays Castle's daughter in Castle. Or played Castle's daughter in Castle. Right? Again, she's in her early 20s, and I know she's a good actress.
That works.
I'll save Russ Thorne for last. My Kim was Mackenzie Vega, sister to Alexa Vega. And she's been in a lot of stuff. She's in Sin City. She was in 13 Reasons Why.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so she's coming into her own as an actress.
Awesome. So we could go with either one because they're siblings.
Exactly. You could do them both.
I got somebody from 13 Reasons.
You could do Alexa as Val and Mackenzie as Courtney.
Nice.
Boom. I like that.
You could easily do that.
Yep. Then they'll look related.
Then they'll my Courtney looks a lot like Molly Quinn too. So I went with somebody who does look similar. But for my Jackie, I went with an actress by the name of Paris Berelc. I can't even say it. It's Berelc. She's done a lot of teen TV stuff. Most notably, she's one of the lead characters in a show called Alexa and Katie, which I haven't seen, but
I've heard of it.
Yes, but again, a nice looking young woman.
IMDb rabbit hole. We're having faith in you.
Yes, we are. Yeah. Because she's worked a lot in the few years that she's worked.
Yeah.
And being a series regular on a teen TV show kind of sold me.
Okay. Mm.
Well, yeah, playing a teen all the time.
For my bitchy character, I'm kind of I've used her before, and I'm going to use her again for Diane. I went with Bella Thorne.
Mm-hmm.
She came across me too. Yeah. I was going to give her another.
I mean, I didn't want to cast her in one of the lead roles, but I liked her so much in The Babysitter.
Yes.
That this is a similar type of character. I thought this, you know, let's just keep her there. She can kind of keep that punky look that she has naturally too.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would add something really fun, dynamic to that character. She has the piercings and she's not a mean girl, but she's walking that edge.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For my Courtney, I went with her name is Raffi Cassidy. She's been in movies such as Tomorrowland, Killing of a Sacred Deer. Mm-hmm. So she's
very capable.
Very capable, yes. Yeah. She's got a movie coming out with, actually last year was in a movie with Natalie Portman as well that I really want to see.
Right.
Which names escapes me right now, but I'll find out. For my Jeff, I went with Christian Navarro from 13 Reasons Why.
Nice.
And then for my Neil, I went with Ross Lynch, who plays Harvey in Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
And then for my Russ Thorne, I went with an actor that I really, really like. He looks like he could be related to the original actor. I went with Titus Welliver. He was in our episode of Assault on Precinct 13. He was in Gone Baby Gone. He's the lead in a TV series on Prime called Bosch.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
He's kind of a gruff, mean-looking man, but he's also a really good actor. And when nice. He's playing the nice guy, he's actually kind of fun to watch, too.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. How does he rock all denim? Like our killer in this one.
I'm sure he'll be just fine. And then for my director, I went with somebody who's already done sort of feminist horror. I went with Cora Lee Fierget from the director of Revenge. Because if you want somebody who's going to take the feminist perspective and make it work and really amp up the gore,
yep,
that's your girl. So yeah, that's where I went with that.
Okay.
Nice.
Okay. I got a lot of people here to run through as well. We're going to have at least casting crossovers from shows, but not the same people.
Okay.
Nice.
So this will be fun. For my lead, Trish, I went with Kiernan Shipka from Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. She plays Sabrina.
Yeah.
Nice.
So, that's why I stayed away from her, actually.
Yeah. And I'm like, well, she's got that innocence, but, you know, we see her as a strong lead in that. I'm like, okay, I kind of dig her. She kind of has the vibe, and considering the character we've went with, I figured that's just even builds even better for her. For my Diane, I went with Cameron Bicondova. She plays Selena Kyle on Gotham.
Oh, yes. Yep.
So, you know, that I think there'll be a nice rivalry there. Just when I think about the type of character she would be as Selena Kyle, I'm like, okay, all right, this is, and especially what we've come up with now, I'm like, all right, this is working towards my casting quite nicely. For my Valerie, I went with Natalia Dyer from Stranger Things. Okay. She's the older sister, and I think she's kind of got the innocence look quality that Valerie would have. For my Kim, I went with Karen Fukuhara from Suicide Squad. She played Katana.
She was one of the people that I was looking at.
Yeah, and I wanted to add a little more multiculturalness to the cast.
Make it more honest to the way our world is now.
Yeah, yes. Because it felt like there was just like one token in the movie, and it bugged me.
Mm-hmm.
So, for my Jackie, I went with Alicia Beau from 13 Reasons Why.
Nice.
Just because I liked her look. I've never seen the show. I'm never going to see the show.
That's one of those ones. I know what it's about. I don't know if I could get
through it. Yeah, that's just, that doesn't seem like a topic I want to watch. For my Courtney, I went with Tegan Croft, who plays Raven on Titans.
Nice.
Also somebody I considered. Again, but
I love the crossover.
Well, I had to consciously think about it because Jay and I have a lot of the same watching tastes.
Yeah.
Right. So I know that Jay's tends to sort of go with the stuff that he's comfortable with and stuff, and actors he recognizes, which is the way we should do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I had to cast some actors I didn't know well just to make sure.
You stayed out of my way.
Basically, I stayed out of Jay's way. Yes, that's exactly it. That's exactly what I did.
For my Linda, I went with Carlson Young from the Scream TV series, since she's our first kill. Very pretty girl that's on that series, and no stranger to horror.
Yes. So, well, it's Scream.
Scream. It's Scream. For Russ Thorne, our killer, I went with Charles Aiken. He's from The Nick and Happy Death Day.
Which one is he?
The dude?
the guy in the hospital room?
I don't remember his name, but he's one of the friends.
Okay, yes.
Yeah. For my Jeff, I went with Dylan Minnette from Don't Breathe and Let Me In.
Also from 13 Reasons Why.
For Neil, he's got the geekier look we were talking about. We were on the same page there. Yeah. I went with Keir Gilchrist, and he was in It Follows.
Oh, yes.
And he's also in something else. He's actually in a lot of stuff.
He's a busy actor. He's a very busy actor. The one I thought most people would recognize him from. For my coach, Jana, I went with Alicia Vella-Bailey, who was in Lights Out, and is primarily a stunt woman.
Nice.
Because, which I wanted to have that really fit build for the gym teacher. She's in her 40s, but she did stunts on Wonder Woman.
Nice.
So it gives you an idea of the kind of stuff she does. So I thought that would come in handy in a myriad of ways. But she's also done regular acting as well. So I thought she'd be really great for this. And for my John Minor, just because he looks like a dumb jock, I went with Jake Sim. He was in It.
Okay.
Yeah. He's got the thick build, much like the character in the movie had. So, unfortunately, I didn't cast...
Thick build in the brain and the body?
I didn't cast David Contant. I forgot the neighbor. Oh. But, hey, how about Nicolas Cage?
Nice.
There we go.
I didn't do my neighbor.
Especially with how we talked about him. Do you have a neighbor?
Sam Rockwell.
Also, very good choice. Yes.
He
love
could do
that choice.
Pervy, but a little bit charming.
Yes. Also, excellent choice.
Yay.
Okay. For Nicolas my Cage. Director, I went with Marty Noxon. Now, she's an actress director. She's directed To the Bone with Keanu Reeves back in 2017. Nice. And you can catch her on screen in Buffy the Vampire Slayer. She's been involved a few episodes there because I wanted somebody who's directed a few episodes of that because we talked about the Whedon-esque dialogue aspect of this. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I wanted somebody who would understand how to do that. But if you want to catch her on screen, she's a really good singer as well. So she's in the sing-along blog. She's also does nice. The parking ticket song. In the Buffy musical. Okay.
I did not. I know. As soon as you said Marty Noxon, I knew who you were talking about.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, because, yeah, if you're a Buffy fan, you know who Marty Noxon is.
Yeah. I did not know
that she was actually in episodes. I did not know. She, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So there's somebody, if you want to check her out, her on screen, that's where you can find it, is in Buffy and the Dr. Horrible sing-along blog. And
feeling.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I didn't write down the particular episode she directed, but she's directed about four episodes of Buffy.
Well, and she's also a producer on like the last five or six seasons.
Yeah, she's done a lot of producing four or five as well. Seasons, yeah. Lots of producing credits as
lots
well.
And lots of
so, credits, yeah. I thought, okay, let's see what else let's watch you do a feature here. I think she's completely understands what I at least want out of this movie.
Well, yeah, I mean, when you're talking Buffy,
if
like,
I can't do Drew Goddard, I want the female equivalent of that.
True. And the combination we want of the comedy and the horror and the action, that's Buffy.
Yeah.
And that is my one concern with my director because, if you've not seen Revenge, be prepared because there's no funny at all in that movie.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, like Kathryn Bigelow, she hasn't done a lot of funny, but like she can do the themes. But I mean, there's some funny parts of Point Break that I really liked.
Yeah, and there's some funny points in one of my favorite of her movies as well. There's some really great comedic dialogue.
Oh, wait, yeah, and in Strange Days, there's some pretty good bits.
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right. Well, I think we had some great casting here, and all of those would be very watchable, and we came up with some fun ideas, and it really comes down to making these believable characters, because slashers are slashers. They have the same basic structure, and you got to make it feel different by just believing in the characters and the metaphors that horror often represents. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that's strongly here, and you want to really keep the female ideal and the feminism aspects of this particular horror movie intact, and let's get back to the core of what the intention was.
Yeah, and that's why I like the idea that we're not necessarily killing off everybody.
Yeah,
right? I mean, they didn't even in the original, but even take it a little bit further and keep Jackie alive.
Yeah, I don't think the gratuitous nudity is needed at all. I don't. None of us have really mentioned it, and I don't think there's
the only
much
place where
point
it fits
it.
Is the scene where the two guys are lurking in the window. It actually makes sense to be there because it actually is part of the story.
Mm-hmm. And part of that too is also like, again, as a girl who grew up, if you're getting changed, there's not that much shame in doing it.
I guess maybe if we're talking about the exploring the sexuality aspects of Trish. Maybe the shower scene is important. I mean, you can shoot in such a way where you're not seeing a whole lot.
And
the characters should be the ones that see it. We don't need to.
Yeah, like you can see her some conflict with her. Like, I mean, that look that they share, that's, I think, important. But the conflict sort of with Trish should be there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's an opportunity there to sort of have them sort of make that look, and Valerie sees the look that she's getting from Trish, and it makes her uncomfortable, which kind of feeds into the scene there later where she doesn't want to go to the slumber party.
Ooh, yes. Mm-hmm. Right?
Because she's not really sure how Trish feels about her. Like, she gets what's happening more so than anybody else.
And you can also have, like, okay, if you're actually putting any nudity in, it could be Trish, like, just kind of glancing about and being like, what is, like, she's gonna look that's what she's attracted to.
If you're gonna do nudity, there's nothing wrong with a bare bottom scene,
right? Not at all.
Right? Show me a bum. I'm fine with a bum.
And you can even have Trish
side boob.
You can have nudity without being gratuitous about it. You don't need to be showing off full frontal and lingering close-ups.
But
I can't wait to show scenes where they're getting undressed in better underwear. Like, the 80s underwear was bugging me at a certain point. I'm like, you'd like the saggy, warpy bits. And I'm like, no.
Yeah, tremendously unsexy.
Uncomfortable, I will tell you as well. Lived through it.
We've come a long way, baby.
We really have. That's the thing about some of these movies. Like, I'm looking at it going like, yeah, I lived through that.
The advancement of underwear technology.
Yes. Advancement of underwear
technology.
Even
for men, it's advanced. I'm sorry, but it's true.
Oh, the boxer brief? That's been brilliant.
Got to keep everything there.
Well, without, in the tidy whities, no. But no. Boxer brief, yes.
Oh, yeah, that was the best discovery. Of
So, yeah, it's true. Underwear has advanced.
Mm-hmm. Come a long way, all of us. It's brilliant.
A great use of technology.
Absolutely. Okay, well, that was the Slumber Party Massacre. That was more fun than I thought it was going to be honest. It was a bit arduous to watch. It doesn't age particularly well. But for a first feature, it got somebody's career off the ground, and I think that's awesome.
Absolutely. And that was the whole thing. Like, I mean, it's I think we found the nuggets of what was supposed to be in there.
I think we've
rediscovered them and put them back in and grew them into something good.
Yeah. And you know what? If she's available still, if I were going to have a writer come back, I would have Rita come back.
Yes.
Sure. I mean, I would love to see, given
what,
just
what her
enough,
vision was.
Well, and just given enough time to do it properly, what Amy Holden Jones would do now instead of having to rush out and it'd be unfortunate. Watch, she'll do it again. She'll do her own remake, and the next ET will come along, and she'll be fuck, not twice.
Yeah,
twice.
Oh, that would be heartbreaking. But if you guys are listening, you know, we'll help you. We want to be in.
I'll deliver a pizza.
Oh, yeah. I don't know what I would do. I'll be the mom that leaves. That's what I'll do.
Mm-hmm. Or you can be...
You could be the picture of maybe one of the crime scene photos from the original killings that they talk about.
Or you can be the building super who puts the drill through the door.
Oh, you know what? Yes, I want to be the building super, and I will finish that fucking people.
There we go. Picking up what you're putting down.
Exactly. I will do... This is important to me. I want to see it happen.
Sam's going to have an Alfred Hitchcock thing, walking a dog across the screen.
Yeah.
I don't know. I see you as being the dad.
I can deliver the two lines of dialogue he has.
There you go.
Yeah. Or, you know what?
Sam's got some on-screen experience.
I like that. Or maybe I would even like to see Sam be the neighbor.
You know what? It's funny. I was thinking the same thing. I would do it. I would absolutely do it.
I think you could try that line. I have very big belief in you. I think you could do it.
I think I could be the skeevy, pervy, creepy neighbor, yeah.
All right.
Slightly charming. But the one,
Die with a Barbie in his eye?
But the one you're like, you're not sure. Yeah. You're skeevy and pervy, but you do still care whether they die or not.
Well, of course I care, because then what am I going to leer at?
True. And you could kill snails. I know you
could. His window's facing the best direction.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, that's
I would love to see you drawing on
to talk about the snail killing.
Yes.
Oh, the snail.
The snail hunt. I didn't get that.
No.
We've never had snails.
And you know what? I didn't understand the whole hacking them in half to kill them kind of thing. But it sets up the counting. Because he's counting how many snails he kills.
Oh.
And it also creates that scene where Diane is getting the wood, and then she gets startled because by the snail, and then by the hatchet.
Diane's
and you think,
getting
the
wood.
Killer, right?
Yeah, she totally wanted to.
Yeah, it certainly feels. It starts to set up.
There was
what you
a
wanted.
Joke there, wasn't there?
Yeah, she was
and
getting
it just
wood.
Didn't. She was getting wood. Yeah. Oh my god!
But you know. That was also something that
plays
they
really
even,
good after the blowjob conversation.
Yeah.
True. But also what they didn't do, what they could have done is like, yeah, it was like we have wood too, and they're beating the guy to death with like the wood. That would be useful. Beating him off his mortal coil.
I don't get it.
Yeah,
sorry. No, I had to go there.
Don't apologize.
No apologizing.
Yes.
My brain goes down those deep wells.
And then, you know, I kind of like it, to be honest.
I mean, if you all want, right.
Want to get into the parody, that's getting you right onto that parody train, and it's taking you all the way to Laughville.
We're totally getting off on it. It's great.
I'm usually the one that does the puns.
Yeah.
But that's okay. I'll let you have them today.
Yay.
Because you're so much better at it today. Well, you're all refreshed from a
I'm
few
all
weeks
refreshed,
off.
So I can come bring those back. It's been eating at me. I've got to get them out now.
That's right. They've been just welling up inside.
They've been building the pressure.
And now it's all just coming out.
Yeah. Like the blood in most of the movies. It should have been.
Yeah, that's one thing that does need to happen is the gore, the murder.
Yeah, the effects just weren't very good in this.
And again, when you look
that's
at budget.
That's a budget restraint.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also budgetary, when you're looking at like doing a bloody, gory scene, you do it once. And then if you have to do another one, like you got to clean them up, you got to reset. That takes a lot of time and money.
And let's face it, Amy Jones was an inexperienced director. And like I said, there's some stuff that she did really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
Like she has a great eye.
Yeah, there are some times where I was pretty impressed of just her camera positioning. Yeah. And
I like the bit where Val is watching the horror movie, which is mimicking the guy getting stabbed outside.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That was, and they're showing her eyes and like stuff happening. That was good.
Yeah, no, there's definitely some moments in this movie to appreciate, for sure. Yeah.
Sure. So they have to be watching Slumber Party Massacre in our remake.
That'd be funny if they were watching the original film.
But they're watching the part where she's watching the movie.
I like that, yes.
So Ouroboros is eating its own tail.
Yeah.
Inception level.
Yeah. No, I like it. I like it a lot.
Yeah, and only geeks like us would get it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's something for the horror nerds, for sure. Yeah. All right, that was Slumber Party Massacre, our first entry into Women of Horror Month. And Women in Horror, this is the 10th anniversary, so we'll be celebrating it for the rest of the month. And we've got three more great episodes ahead of us. But don't forget, there are other podcasts also getting involved with their own specials as well. If you want to check them out, look for the hashtag AllTheHorror on Twitter or follow at AllTheHorror18 on Twitter to get filled in on everything. That's Women in Horror Month on those podcasts.
And don't forget to check out Women in Horror on Twitter as well.
Yes.
We're not the only people doing stuff. There's a ton of other stuff going on. So yeah, check out at WIHM on Twitter. They have a website. It's all linked to from their Twitter. If you're not a Twitter user, you'll have to do a little legwork. But definitely, it's worth doing the legwork.
Mm-hmm.
Support the blood drive because it is a good cause. It's accomplishing two goals in one event, which is wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, and think, you know, giving blood, you go there, you get a cookie and some juice. It's nice.
Yeah. And hey, we're not asking for blood from you, but we are asking for maybe a 5-star rating and a review on the platforms you most enjoy us on. And we are on a ton of different platforms, so please spread the love and tell everybody where to find us. Most notably, we are on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, Radio Public, and so many more. If you want to check it out, we check out our social media feeds. We are at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion the Remake on Facebook and Instagram, and invasiontheremake@gmail.com if you want to email us your suggestions and your corrections and your comments. We'd love to hear from you. And we got our link trees up there as well, so you can find even more places to enjoy the show. Yes. And of course, yeah. We drop every Tuesday as a podcast, and if you're listening to us on YouTube, we're every Thursday there, so make sure you keep your
earballs
on the show.
Jay missed that so
I'm
much.
Back for that.
Yeah, I did. I tried to fit one in the other day. I don't know, one of the episodes while you're away, but it just didn't feel right.
No, it felt awkward and kind of forced.
You're forcing things into people's
It was my
ball?
Sadness showing.
Yes.
Stuffing the earballs, just stuffing them in.
Did we say we missed you? I might have to take that back.
Sorry, like I said, there's been a lot of buildup. I'm exploding right now.
Yeah, there's
all over Sam's face, neck, and chest.
It doesn't matter what's in my body. What is it? It doesn't matter how big my body is. What's in it?
There we go. And on that note,
I've been Jason.
I am always Sam.
And I continue to be Trish.
And we are out of here.
Pretty. All of you are very pretty.
Please don't do this.
I love you.
Please. I didn't hurt you. Please don't do this.
Takes a lot of love for a person to do this.